it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden World Cup Daily Podcast. Australia are off the mark at the 2023 World Cup, beating Sri Lanka by 5 wickets and 15 or so overs to spare in Luk Now. It's a comprehensive victory in the end, but it didn't always look that way, especially when Sri Lanka were 125 for naught in the 22nd over. But Sri Lanka collapsed, and they collapsed in some style, unfortunately. Adam Zampa took 4 as Australia bowled out Sri Lanka for 209, a total they chased down in style despite falling to 24 for 2 against the new ball as youngster Dilshan Madushankar dismissed David Warner and Steve Smith in the same over. I'm Yaz Rana, and with us for the first time is Sri Lankan cricket writer Estelle Vasudevan. Ben will be joining us in part two to talk about Australia. Estelle, great to have you on the show. 125 for naught with Kusal Pereira and Pathim Nisanka. It was looking so good for Sri Lanka. Some of that sloppiness that we've seen in Australia so far, this tournament was still on show. Sri Lanka were properly in this game, but what happened?
Yeah, it's funny. I think even the commentators made note of the fact that Australia looked so flat in that first 20 overs of Sri Lanka's innings. And suddenly it was like a completely different team once the wickets started falling. What went wrong? I think that's the mystery, isn't it, with Sri Lanka batting at the moment. It seems like when the top order fires, the middle order doesn't, and the middle order fires, the top order doesn't. So this was the first game where we had a decent start. Kusal Pereira getting into things finally after a couple of failures in the first couple of games. But then in the middle overs, Sri Lanka lost a lot of wickets. Unfortunately, it's something that's seems like a recurring problem. I mean, we don't have to even look that far back. In the last game against Pakistan, I think Sri Lanka were 220 plus in 30 overs. They ended up with 340 on that occasion. But looking at 220 plus in 30 overs, you would expect, particularly on those tracks, that they would have crossed the 380 run mark. Similarly, even in the warm-ups, and I know you don't usually read too much into the warm-up games, but in both of those games, Sri Lanka were in really good positions, 240 in 30 overs in one, and I think 120 plus in 20 overs in the other, still ended up with less than 300 in both games. So I think it's a recurring problem. They don't seem to have any answers to it, because like I said before, when they do get a good start with the openers, there seems to be a collapse waiting to happen in the middle overs, or the middle order comes in when a few extra wickets have fallen at the top of the order. So definitely a big issue for Sri Lanka going forward in this tournament.
Mm. I guess on paper, it's still quite a young, relatively young Sri Lankan side, relatively young batting order. And Sri Lanka have obviously changed a lot in the last decade. A decade ago, they would have been almost dead certs to qualify for the knockout stages at a World Cup. It's a pretty young side now. And with 3 defeats from 3, it's unlikely they'll get into the top 4 this time round. But are you hopeful that this young core could take them to something special down the line. I mean, Kusar Mendes, for me, is one of the most frustrating players in the world. It's criminal that he's only scored 3 ODI 100s, but he seems to have taken his game up to another level this tournament. Pathum Nusanka is a very exciting young player. There's a lot of talent in that lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with Sri Lanka, I think what you can say is there's never been a shortage of talent. There's always been talent in Sri Lanka. The problem is then converting that talent into performance. And that's the issue we continuously experience with this side. In the last couple of years, there's definitely been an improvement as opposed to right after the 2015 World Cup, leading into that 2019 World Cup. But like you said, yeah, young team. I think in the squad itself, maybe Sri Lanka have like 4 players over the age of 30, which is I think, quite new for a team like Sri Lanka. Generally, we do see a lot of 30-plus players in the side. But this time around, they've kind of switched things around. They've got a lot of youngsters. Some of it is forced with the likes of Vanidu Hasaranga, who is quite young as well. But Dushmanta Chamira missing out. They've been forced to bring in a couple of really young bowlers in Matisha Pathirana, Dilshan Madushankar, you mentioned before, to make up for those losses. But if Sri Lanka played right, I think there could be a real force to reckon with in the next 4 to 6 years. But there are definitely some big holes that need to be filled. They kind of have what we can call a foundation to a certain extent to really go to the next level in the next 4 to 6 years. But there are some really big holes to fill as well.
Mm. You mentioned that there's the talent, but that's not necessarily always converted into performance. What do you think that is down to? Why do you think that hasn't quite happened over the last 5 to 8 years? Or do you think that's just one of the things that just can happen with a youngish side?
In the past, there's been a problem with consistency in terms of opportunities. I mean, it's incredible to me that Sri Lanka coming to this World Cup with 2 of their leading fast bowlers, Matisha Pathirana and Dilshan Madushankar, haven't played 10 ODIs. Each, right? Both of them have played less than 10 ODIs. It's incredible that between World Cups, ODI World Cups come every 4 years, right? And you suddenly find yourself in a position where your 2 lead fast bowlers don't really have any experience under their belts. And that has been an issue in the past. And I will also say, I think if you just look at the last couple of years or the last 4 years, there have been lots of injury issues, and that has contributed to the fact that there hasn't been consistency. So, for example, if Sri Lanka had Hasaranga and Chamira, there would have been much more experienced bowling attack. Similarly, in the batting as well, Sadhira Samarawickrama is relatively new to the international scene in terms of number of matches he's played, right? It's a lot of different things, but I think the key issue is that consistency of opportunity hasn't been there in the past.
It's a good point on the injuries. I don't think any team has been as affected by injuries in this tournament as Sri Lanka. You mentioned Hasaranga, Chamira, and also just Tikshan not playing the first game against Africa was such a big blow as well. One young player who we mentioned a couple of times already who stood out today was Madushankar. He got rid of David Warner and Steve Smith in the same over, ended up with 3 wickets. Just on the Warner wicket, Warner was furious on his way back to the dressing room. He reviewed the LBW decision from Joel Wilson, and DRS had it as umpire's call. It was marginal, but it was nowhere near as marginal as a Johnny Bairstow one yesterday. And I feel that players and pundits are unfairly critical of decisions that are umpire's call because it's still out. Anyway, with Madushankar, what's his story? He's not played much international cricket, as you said, but he looked a real handful, really, really swinging that new ball.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys who, you know, it's the type of story that we love to hear, right? He comes from a very poor background, rural south of Sri Lanka. There's been a lot of stories about how he, you know, his school was too poor to have like a real hardball setup. So he used to play a lot of softball cricket, and that's kind of big in Sri Lanka, where you know, it could even be a means to, you know, financially sustain yourself to a degree, playing softball tournaments around the country. Anyway, I think his big break came in 2018 or 19 when he was called up to be a net bowler for India under 19s to Sri Lanka. So he was called up by one of the district coaches, and there's a story that, you know, he couldn't even afford a pair of boots, so I had to borrow a pair of boots, and apparently they were too tight and they were hurting him, and he had wanted to make an excuse and kind of leave the net session early because he didn't want to, you know, tell the coach that he borrowed a pair of boots and they're too tight. So he made up an excuse, but the coach had, you know, kind of compelled him to stay. He ended up, you know, finishing up there. And a few weeks later, he gets a call from Charminder Vaz, inviting him to an under-19 camp in Colombo. And that was, I think, probably the turning point of his life, because from there, he went on to play the under-19 World Cup in the West Indies in 2020. Was definitely a star performer. Then I think Mickey Arthur was the national coach around that time. And even back then, there was chat about him, although he hadn't debuted for Sri Lanka or wasn't in the squad. There was talk about him even back then. He's had a few issues with injury already. He's coming into this tournament after a long injury layoff. Last year's T20 World Cup, he was injured, I think, the day before the first game. So he's had his issues with injury. But I think one thing from the first three games Sri Lanka can take away is that this guy is... he's the real deal, right? He's a guy who can really make it in the international scene. And I mean, just if you look at the wickets he's taken in his career, very short career in T20 and ODI cricket, Virat Kohli, he has Babar Azam, and today he got Stephen Smith. So I can't imagine a better start to a career.
No, he looked really threatened today. You've always got to be careful with boots that are too small for you. I wore football boots that were too small for me in February. It's October now and my feet still haven't really recovered. Anyway, we had a couple of questions on Sri Lanka more generally. The Run Out blog asks, what is the general opinion of Chris Silverwood in Sri Lanka? Listeners of this podcast will know that we are sort of fascinated by how Chris Silverwood is doing in Sri Lanka. I thought it was very brave of him to take on a job of the scale of Sri Lanka when he had just gone through a really difficult final year in the England job. And I've always thought that as spectacular as the collapse was of Chris Silverwood's England, there were some good times as well. England won a test match in India. They had actually a very good first year with Silverwood in charge. How's it gone for Silverwood in Sri Lanka?
Yeah, I think when he took over, it was already a kind of a team that kind of had the ingredients to do well. So I think he's been assisted by that. That's actually quite an interesting question because I haven't really thought of it. But I think when you compare him to his predecessor, Mickey Arthur, there isn't really, I feel, a strong opinion, either positive or negative, towards Silverwood. With Mickey Arthur, it was quite, you know, polarizing almost, right? There were people who loved him and loved the way he handled the team, almost like, you know, that father-like figure. He would take young players under his wing. And then there were those who really did not like him because he seemed, or there was a kind of a issue with how good he was tactically in white ball cricket, right? With Silverwood, I don't see that amount of, you know, thought or that amount of opinion about him. But I will say that I think there's a lot of credit that's given to him in terms of the fast bowling for Sri Lanka. He is, I think, by profession, a fast bowling coach, right? So if you look at Sri Lanka's fast bowling stocks, there's been a really big improvement over the last 4 to 5 years. And I think he's added to that with the current crop of players.
That's really interesting. And finally, Dominic asks, of the many problems that Sri Lanka face, which do you think is the most urgent to deal with?
Yeah, that's another interesting one, because I was going to say the lack of power hitters or finishers in the Sri Lankan side, because that's really a major issue. I mean, if you look, you look at this squad and you look at maybe if the ODI World Cup is a big thing in 4 years, right? Possibly 7 to 8 players who are in this lineup could make it there, right? But the areas that Sri Lanka are lacking are really that 6, 7, 8 batting positions, where they don't have players who can come to the crease and start, you know, going after the bowling. Which, I mean, if you look at teams around the world, Australia today, Maxwell, Stoinis coming in those positions can clear the boundary in their first 10 deliveries, right? Sri Lanka don't really have many players who can do that. I would say at the moment, it's just Dasun Chanakar who even has the potential to do that. And him not clicking has made matters worse for Sri Lanka. So that is definitely an issue that needs to be addressed, the power hitting, because, you know, you'll have players like maybe Pathum Nisankar, Sadhira Samarawickrama, who can get in and then go after the bowling. But the way cricket is moving right now, and if you look at how it's gone in this World Cup, where 320 is maybe par, right? You really need those guys to come in and get you that 30 to 50 runs in a short period of time. And that's an area Sri Lanka has been lacking for. They've never really had that type of combination at 5, 6, 7, and 8. But I was going to say that's the most urgent problem. But is it fitness? Because it's had a massive impact on Sri Lanka. And I'm not just talking about this tournament. Obviously, missing Hasaranga is huge because he adds so much balance into the side with his ability with the bat. But it also means that, you know, you can't put a team together consistently because someone or the other is missing. So, for example, Sri Lanka's opening combination, there's always kind of been, okay, Pathum Nisankar and who? Is it going to be Dimuth Karunaratne? Is it Avishka Fernando? Avishka Fernando basically took the world by storm in the last World Cup, right? Against England, the way he batted, the way he took on Jofra Archer. He was batting at number 3 there, but generally Sri Lanka have used him as an opener. Kusal Janith Pereira. But over the last 4 years, there have been so many injuries that Sri Lanka haven't been able to put together that combination properly. And with them playing so few ODIs as well with the 2 T20 World Cups, that's been really a massive issue. So it's a toss-up between those two. I mean, Sri Lanka really have to fix the power hitting, but the injury issue is also massive.
Mm. That's really interesting. I think for a team that is 0-3, I think there have been a lot of good moments for Sri Lanka so far. And as you say, the foundations are definitely there for potentially building on that and creating something special down the line. Well, Estelle, it's been great having you on the show today. Looking forward to hearing from you later in the competition. That's it for part one. In part two, we'll hear from Ben on Australia and look ahead to tomorrow's game.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Ben, Australia weren't necessarily back to their very best, but once they got that first wicket, they looked more disciplined. Zampa's control was better. Pat Cummins was known to be sharper, actually, than we've seen up until this point in the tournament. Encouraging signs for them after a poor start to the tournament.
And even after a poor start to the game as well, I suppose, and in a few ways. the first over, first ball of the game, they go for a review, which is not out for a few reasons. They lose that. Then they choose not to review later in the same power play when it would have been out. That was Casal Pereira. He didn't have much time on to make 78, the high score of the game. And you're thinking, wow, this is starting to turn from being like a bit of a poor start tournament, but an understandable one, to real rot setting in. And then, yeah, it was Cummins who turned it around. Cummins and actually two really good catches from David Warner, which was also important because they were dropping those early in the tournament as well, two really sharp chances in the outfield. And Cummins, he should make sense as middle overs bowler, right? Like, It hasn't quite clicked, but then also middle overs bowlers can, you know, you can be 155 and have done quite a good job depending on who the one is. And these were one of those where the two he got was the two openers who had started so well. One with the proper Plunkett type short ball that gets a bit big, or that doesn't quite get hold of, hits to the deep, and one with a classic Cummins type little seamer. So that worked well. And then what other sort of things they check off? I suppose, again, a bit of a wobble at the start. They had that amazing first over the innings. You're like, okay, Schroeder properly back here. And then a bit of a wobble. And then Josh Inglis making runs, that's big as well, vindicates that decision.
And also the way he made the runs as well, it was quite authoritative.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we shouldn't read too much into a lot of this. Sri Lanka are weak for, you know, a few reasons, you know, injuries and such. And there wasn't a huge amount of pressure on. But yeah, it did feel a bit more like he was playing in the way Australia have wanted their batters to play. So they will be pretty encouraged by that, but it's qualified encouragement for now, I guess you'd say.
I feel like few players have had better tournaments than Liam Plunkett. He's getting a lot of mentions at the moment, a lot of comparisons to what he did in 2019. And yeah, it was an incredibly eventful first over. Proper man-cad warning from Mitchell Starc before the fourth ball of the game. Kusal Pereira, I think, very, very lucky that Starc decided not to take the bails off, because sometimes, you know, there was another warning that Starc gave Pereira where Pereira wasn't that far out of his crease, but the one before the fourth ball, Pereira was miles down the wicket. And, you know, increasingly players are viewing those as just objective opportunities to take wickets, and Starc was generous, arguably. Just a word on some of the scenes we saw in Lucknow, Ben, in the high winds. A bit of the structure holding a banner fell a considerable distance, and we're lucky and grateful that no one was injured.
Yeah, and yeah, it was because also you weren't really sure what had happened at first. So you saw the players had stopped and they sort of looked over there, and then you look around, there's sort of spectators sort of like running up towards the top of the stand. So basically, yeah, it was really, really windy. Like, the players were struggling with the dust that was being blown across. There was Josh Inglis having to sort of play as a bit of a trash man for a bit, picking up bits of debris from the outfield. And then, yeah, the whole hoarding, so the ICC sort of branded, or World Cup branded boundary hoarding, but sorry, not boundary hoarding, stadium roof perimeter boarding, I guess you'd call it, falls, but with actually some proper scaffolding structure with it. So if the stands were more full, then those people might not have had places to run. But as it was, it sort of kind of fell down in stages a bit, and they were able to get out of the way. But yeah, pretty worrying. And it was really windy, but I guess you'd hope that, you know, stadiums can stay together even when it is windy, I guess.
Tomorrow we've got South Africa versus Netherlands. What are you trying to get people to call this game?
The Van der Derby. Okay. Yeah, I mean, because they're all called either Van or DE, so something,
you say,
aren't they?
You say all, maybe two on each side. Okay. It could also be called the Sybrand Engelbrecht Derby.
Yes, well, a former South Africa under-19s player took a brilliant catch there, as we've discussed on the podcast before, and is now playing for the Netherlands. And quite a recent switch, and not a deliberate one either. You get some players who know they're not going to quite cut it at a top tier nation, say, and then move to where they might have a few more opportunities. That wasn't what he did. He had a job in a, you know, a normal business who were looking to expand the European operation, so relocated him to the Netherlands. He gets there with his wife, but not really knowing anyone, so decides to join a cricket team to make some friends, basically. And then it was actually only, I think, after the qualifier had happened that they looked to see if he was a Netherlands qualified, and the ICC were like, yeah, you're good to go. So he plays a couple of A games, and then now he's going to play against the country that you grew up in.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Is there any hope for the Netherlands, you think?
Well, I mean, I guess if they want an example of them beating South Africa at a World Cup, they have to think back to the last time they played South Africa at a World Cup.
Yes.
and you know, what would be more South Africa than to, you know, look the absolute business and then and then come and do that. And also, you know, there will be a few challenges. I think that, Dutz looked actually really good with the new ball, and maybe new ball spin, if you can sort of pose a different challenge to a South Africa lineup that is still, you know, if you get into it early, there is still that feeling that there's
Jansen
not...
at seven exactly. is you're 5 wickets away, get Jansen in early, and then there's a chance. And the Netherlands are, you know, it's a reasonably strong attack, and particularly strong spin attack as well.
So I'm reasonably enticed by this game, even if obviously South Africa going as heavy favourites. And, you know, also they only have to look back to, you know, yesterday for another World Cup upset that people assumed would go one way. Now South Africa are best than England and Afghanistan are best than the Netherlands, but still there's you know, in a game over 50 overs, you need a couple of things to go your way, and that can happen.
Well, that's it for today. Cheers, folks. Cheers, Ben. We'll be back tomorrow for our weekly show, which will also include a bit on the Netherlands-South Africa game at the very end.
Sports Social Podcast Network.